Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'm your host, Jackie Marie Beyer. Let's get growing.
Welcome to the show today, listeners. I am so excited because I know many of you have heard me talk about how much I love Facebook. And today I have a friend that I went to high school with, and of course we connected on Facebook. And so today she's here to share her journey. So welcome to the show, Mary.
Thank you, Jackie.
And go ahead and tell everybody a little bit about yourself.
Well, I grew up, like Jackie did, on Long Island, the daughter and granddaughter of avid gardeners, and learned from a very young age that the idea of where our food came from very much connected to, you know, the dirt we were standing on. And, you know, so you kind of get away from that as you're a teenager and busy living life. But then when you grow up enough and understand what's important, you go right back to what you knew to be a good thing. So I now live in Northwest New Jersey for the past 18 years with my husband, Richard, and have been a backyard gardener ever since.
Awesome. Okay, so Mary, I always like to start the show by asking guests about your very first gardening experience. Like, how old were you? Were you a kid? You already told us kind of that you were a kid. You probably were an adult. You know, what'd you grow? Who were you with? Tell us a little bit about your very first garden that you can remember.
Actually, it's probably my earliest memories of being at my grandparents' house in Queens Village, New York. And my grandmother had a beautiful garden, vegetable, flowers, and, you know, just being there with her, that was part of life with her. Mm-hmm. And eating the produce from her garden and grapes and peaches from her garden, and just having it be part of my life. And it's not only some of my earliest memories, it's also some of my best memories.
Excellent. I think a lot of my guests say that too, that their very first memories with their grandparents. So I think that's an important thing for listeners. You know, if you have a garden and you have grandkids, get them out there with you. They might kind of, I always like to remind people that, because I know I like resisted. My mom couldn't get me in the garden for the life of me, and now I love it. So even if they're giving you a little pullback, I'll bet that'll be one of their fondest memories. Okay, so do you want to share with us what like organic gardening or earth-friendly gardening means to you?
I think it means that you don't add to the bad. You do whatever you can to make it better and not add to the bad things we already do to the earth.
I like that. And like, who or what inspired you to start using organic techniques? Was it your grandparents or somewhere else? Or
yeah, well, you know, I don't think there was other options for my grandparents. It was just what it was, you know. Mm-hmm. They didn't have Miracle-Gro. And you know, with my own parents, I don't remember them using a lot of chemicals. Mm-hmm. So it just wasn't part of what we did. They weren't in the garage. And here, you know, I started off, I think, more trying to fight nature by using the chemicals to keep, you know, certain things alive or prevent certain things from growing. And it came into crystal clear relief when we moved into the house we live in today. And there's a lake down the block, one block away, beautiful, largest lake in New Jersey. And 2 days after we moved in, I woke up to the Department of Public Works spray painting this giant iron grate that's at the end of our driveway with drains to lake and a little picture of a fish. And it was, a light bulb went off and went, oh my gosh, everything that rolls off my property goes right into that lake. And it just was so crystal clear in that moment that I have to be so conscious of everything I do, because I have a well, my neighbors have a well, and then we also have this beautiful natural resource, you know, 50 feet away. And it just never was more clear.
That's a great, just a super visual. I can totally picture the, you know, them doing the little picture of the fish and being by your lake. And I think that's important. It's rebuilding that connection to the earth, and that, you know, the chemicals don't just go away. Things don't just disappear, that they do go somewhere.
And you know, these created chemicals don't just, you know, dissolve into the earth and become pure. They leave a toxic footprint.
So, how did you learn how to garden organically then?
Well, you know, I read a lot. I read some gardening books, but they were, you know, I don't think they'd evolved yet. But so I just started asking. Excuse me. We have a lucky to have a lot of farms around here, you know, within a half an hour, and you start talking to people. You know, how do you get rid of Japanese beetles? And one woman said, "Listen, you give up some of the flowers to them, but if you don't want, the best way to do is pick them off and put them in a bag and throw them away." You know, and don't fight what's supposed to be growing here. Don't try and grow mangoes in Northwest New Jersey is one odd thing that somebody gave me as an example. So, you know, you just trial and error. Things that don't do well without chemicals, I don't plant. Things that do well, I plant a lot of.
Perfect. So let's talk about your garden. Do you want to tell us about something that grew well this year? Or maybe even
Surprisingly,
last summer?
tomatoes always do well, and melon always does well, herbs do well. I've learned never to plant mint in the ground again. I spent 7 years getting rid of it. It's now firmly in a pot away from soil, away from the garden soil. Too many fruits and vegetables in the compost pile attracts bears.
Really? Okay.
The one thing I do have to do something to prevent is the deer. We make a spray of Dr. Bonner's mint and lemon balm and ice and cayenne, like those little bird eye chilies. And we make a tea out of it and mix it in with some Castile soap. And I spray that around the garden every morning and every night. So what does do well then is tomatoes, cucumbers, melon, and herbs. And this year, surprisingly, the corn, I think for the first time, my husband and I will have more than one ear to share. So very, very excited.
I know that feeling well. We're excited because we finally are going to have a real crop of corn this year. But I, well, hopefully, knock on wood, if everything goes well. But it's actually tasseling already. So, and it's taller than my husband. So it, I think we're pretty safe. Corn's a tough one, but it's so exciting. And I tell listeners a lot about this story. Once I was really, really sick. And Mike had just picked the first ear or two of corn that he got. And usually we get like a half a dozen ears at the most if we're lucky. And he made me this like soup broth out of the corn, just like somehow fed me the broth from cooking the corn, and it like saved me like chicken noodle soup would. So for vegetarians, I recommend fresh corn broth.
I make fresh corn salsa with, you know, locally
Ooh.
farmers market corn, and you know, with my jalapenos and scallions, and oh, it just makes me deliriously happy.
Okay, cool. That sounds delicious. All right. How about something you would do different, like something you're excited to try next year that's different or new? Anything?
I think I'm looking into more like I did for the first time Japanese long cucumbers,
I saw those are pictures.
which are amazing, and the more you pick them, the more they grow. I picked seven this morning,
Ooh.
and so my neighbor's going to get those whether she wants them or not. And so I'm trying more like some of the Asian eggplants, the small Asian eggplants,
Oh.
and other different melons. Musk melons do very well here, but I'm also branching out into some of the like pickling melons. I love
Oh.
pickles, so I will pickle almost anything.
Wait, I never heard of a pickling melon. Is that like a cantaloupe melon, or what kind of melon is that? A honeydew
It
type, or?
looks like it's oblong, like a football shaped, and you eat the flesh. The flesh is slightly bitter, but then you pickle the rind,
Oh,
and
uh-huh.
it becomes this crunchy, bright, like most interesting flavor, almost citrusy. And you know, just fascinating. Great on, you know, salads and things. or out of the jar at, 11 o'clock at night.
I think listeners are going to love this. You have been so full of cool tidbits. Now, what's the difference between a Japanese cucumber and a regular cucumber?
Okay, so there's the Kirby's, the little like green and white Kirby cucumbers that are thick and usually about 5 inches long. They're great for pickles, especially like half sour pickles or quick pickles. Then there's the traditional American cucumber, which tends to get very seedy and woody. You have to, dig out the seeds.
Oh, uh-huh.
But the flesh is nice. The Japanese cucumber, not unlike the English hothouse cucumber, has dark green skin and little spines on it that you have to scrub off, or you can get like a little prickly rash from them. You scrub those off, you peel them, and they have very delicate small seeds, so you can eat them. And they tend not to upset your GI tract like some cucumbers do.
Oh, uh-huh.
But they're firm and sweet and moist. And if you juice them, you wind up with this cucumber water that is like nirvana on a hot day.
Wow.
And they're wonderful. They grow about 16 inches long and about the diameter of a quarter, not too wide. And they grow like crazy. It's a great plant for a kid because it's so amazing how fast they grow, and the gigantic cucumber leaves and the curly tendrils all over the place. It's just magnificent.
Excellent. Okay. Oh, I love that. And I love anything that's fun for kids and a good one for kids to do.
Yeah. Like for my great niece and great nephew, the Japanese cucumbers and like the Santa, the pear, the grape, the cherry 1000, all those little tomatoes. Mm-hmm. And they just snack on them all day long in the backyard. Wonder, they're still on Long Island, but yeah, as soon as they bought their house, that's the first thing we did was you get a garden in.
Oh, excellent. Cool. All right. How about telling us about something that didn't work so well this season? Anything that you're struggling with?
I think because of the heat, I'm having a lot of trouble with leaf mold. Oh. And it's taking a toll on some of my tomato plants and on, what else was it, getting after the zucchini. The zucchini are small, mm-hmm. and they're a little, some of them were a little bitter later in the season. So I'm surprised because that's usually a bumper crop, and I don't know, I have to revisit why that's not doing so well or if it's just the heat. Maybe I need to find some way to protect it from the, the intense afternoon sun.
Oh, uh-huh. One thing some people have talked about on my show about like mold and stuff is just making sure that everything's up off the ground. If I don't know if that'll help.
Yeah. And sometimes it's not always easy to do it.
Yep.
And it seems that once it gets to the plant,
yeah.
and if I've missed it and not, cut off those leaves as quickly as possible. And then somebody told me to mix a quarter cup of bleach with 5 gallons of water.
Really?
And spray it. And I tried it on one plant, but then the plant burnt in the sun. So I have to talk to more farmers about that.
All right. I know. I wondered about, can you put bleach right on a plant?
Yeah. And, in that low of a dilution or high of a dilution, whichever.
Right. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Forgive me. Chemistry was too many years ago.
And not my subject. If they had only taught botany in high school.
Yeah. I was more social sciences kind of person. The proper science is not so much. Mm-hmm.
How about something that you find is easy to grow and successful generally every time?
Tomatoes.
Okay.
Always, every time, no matter what. And there is nothing that tastes better than a tomato that's warm from the garden. And you pop that baby into your mouth or you take a bite and the juice spurts out all over. And it's sweet and bright. And it's just my favorite thing.
Now, you had some tomatoes posted on Facebook, so your tomatoes are already, I don't know, I mean, we're in Montana, and ours are just coming out. We have, like, the cherry tomatoes, we got a few of those this week.
I've been picking tomatoes since the end of June, which was very, very early. So what we did, we bought plants from a farm or nursery where they grow their own plants from seed. And so they're local native soil. And you spade them up and, you know, you get them home. So we had a very late spring here. I started a lot of things in the house.
Oh, okay. That's what I was wondering about.
And we do about 20 varieties of tomato.
Oh, you do? Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. That's a lot of tomato plants.
It is. And it's wonderful.
Do you, like, can't, you said you can salsa. Do you do tomato sauce or any of that? Or just, you just eat that many tomatoes? Or
I don't eat that many tomatoes. I give a lot of them to my neighbors. I also went to our local senior center and asked permission to ask the people there if they were interested in, you know, tomatoes. I established that I wasn't crazy or trying to poison them. Oh. And a lot of the senior citizens who could no longer garden but appreciated fresh fruits and vegetables were more than happy. So twice a week I drop off, you know, as much as I have surplus. Aww. And people pick and choose if they want it or not. So, you know, it helps people, and I get to share something I love.
Aw, that's so sweet. And then I guess you're also, you benefit because you get to have like a big variety of tomatoes.
Right.
That you way know, and not feel like you're wasting a bunch of food that you can't eat.
Yeah.
Or feeling overwhelmed that you have to can it all.
Yeah, but so, you know, for tomatoes, what I do with, especially the cherry tomatoes and the smaller like patio tomatoes, I cube them, I saute them with garlic and a little olive oil and freeze them in one of those, you know, I can't think of what it's called. You take the air out and it's vacuum packs them. And then I can use them in recipes and soups and stews throughout the winter. And it's a good, you know, recipe base for so many things.
That's a great idea. You know, nobody said anything like that on the show. That is a great idea to actually just saute them in the olive oil and the garlic ahead of time and then just freeze them like that.
Right.
Perfect.
And it is a great recipe base for like risotto or soups or stews or quick pasta dishes. You know, you defrost that, have some cooked pasta, crumble in some feta and, you know, a touch of vermouth and some herbs, and you have dinner in, you know, 12 minutes. I mean, it's really
yeah. Oh, that is just awesome. Cause then it's like, you know, it's still homemade, but it's almost like, you know, the easy processed food because you've already done your own homegrown processing.
Yeah.
And so you've got that convenience piece in there, but yep, it's delicious. And
things like,
my
you
mouth's
know,
watering already.
We grow a lot of bell peppers and a lot of chili peppers. And those, I pair them, you know, de-seed them, and I roast them in the oven. And much the same thing, I store them with olive oil and, you know, use them in recipes, you know, through the winter from frozen. And I know.
Do you want to just share really quick, like, how you roast them in the oven? Do you put them on, like, tinfoil on a baking sheet and then?
I put them on a rimmed baking sheet with garlic oil that I've made, which is, you take a small, you know, heavy bottom saucepan, you fill it halfway with olive oil, you put in as much garlic as you think you like. I like the flavor. I tend to use a whole head of garlic. I just quarter it and drop it in the oil. You heat that oil over a low flame until the garlic has given its flavor over to the oil. You strain it, you bottle it, and you keep it in the refrigerator. And when it comes time to, I have an abundance of vegetables, I core them and usually slice them in quarters, you know, like panels, if you will. If it's a pepper, think of it as a panel.
Oh, cool.
And toss it with the garlic oil, some salt and pepper, and roast it on a low oven, you know, 220, 250.
Oh,
for about 35 minutes.
Okay.
Because what you do, you want to draw out the moisture, but you don't want to cook it to death because you're going to cook it again down the road.
Okay, cool. Oh, I'm glad I asked. Oh, that sounds so good. I love the garlic oil idea. What was
Yeah, because cooking, like the more flavor you develop, it just only adds to the end product.
Now, got any secrets for you're growing these peppers yourself, and are they green peppers or different colored peppers or?
We don't generally do green peppers. We do red bell, orange bell, yellow bell, purple bell. We do all kinds of chili peppers. And what else? The long frying pepper, I think they call it, like an Italian frying pepper. And so that we do all kinds of peppers. And on peppers, I always do in pots, not in the ground.
Oh, okay.
I find for some reason they do dramatically better in pots, but I mean in big pots. I'm talking the pot is 3 feet high and 3 feet around.
Okay.
Or some kind
I
of
always
raised
find the hard part
bed.
for me with pots is they dry out so fast. Do
I
you
water
agree?
twice a day.
You do. Okay.
Yep. Every morning, it's the first thing I do. I take my coffee outside and I water in the if we haven't had enough rain. But yes, the pots generally have to be watered twice a day.
Now, what's your, I mean, we are in dry. This is the driest year. It's been windy year. Like what normally would be August weather, we've had since June. We had a few 100-degree days in June. Like is that what you guys have had?
It's
Or
been very much the same. It's been very hot,
yes.
been very humid, which I think is attributing to some of my leaf mold issues. And yes, we're having everything's early. It's August started in July.
All right. How about something you would steer new gardeners away from that you find is typically challenging to grow in your climate?
We're actually very fortunate here. We have good soil where I live, Northwest is kind of closer to Pennsylvania than it is to Jersey.
Oh, okay.
It is not rural, but it's certainly not, I live in a borough. It's a very small town, and there's still a lot of summer residents because of the lake. So I have to say, we're very lucky about being able to grow things that are native to the area. So, I go back to don't try and grow things that don't belong here. And, stick to the basics of things that you like to eat. It's silly to grow something if you're not going to eat it.
That's a really important success tip. And people, I think, get overwhelmed and then they see these crazy things and they're like, oh, I should try that. And it's, I think, especially when you're starting out, it's good to just stick to things that you know you're going to eat. Like, if you don't like cauliflower, don't worry about growing cauliflower. If you like broccoli, grow broccoli. If you don't like broccoli, don't grow broccoli. I
Right.
know.
And grow more than, you can do, if you live in a little, pied-à-terre or a little condo, you can do a tomato pot, on a windowsill in the sun. But, if you live in a house, you don't need to have a gigantic lawn. You could put in lots of native perennials and mix it in with lots of vegetables. And, it's much better for your soil to have, less grass, more food.
Yep. I've been thinking about Bill Maher on the other night was showed a picture of his yard and he was talking about in California the big drought and telling people, don't worry about your brown yard. And I was thinking, I'm gonna have to send him a note and like a link to my podcast and some information about how to grow a native lawn. He doesn't have to have that brown lawn and he still doesn't have to use up all the water.
Right.
So,
Yeah, now I refuse to water grass, but I will absolutely water vegetables.
I
If
like that.
the sky doesn't provide enough rain, I'll water the vegetables and but I refuse to water grass.
I had another guest on who talked about that, and that's the way their garden is too. In Missoula, David Smelterling, I think was his last name, talked a lot about how the only, because the water that they use is drinking water, and he looks at it as a precious resource. And he's like, we have like over 100 different plants, just in a regular lot in the middle of town, and he gets hundreds of birds and different species of insects and just lots of different wildlife type of things coming to his yard. And they don't have to water anything. And so that, and also, a lot of people talk about that makes it a joy to go out in your garden when you don't have a lot of that Because watering is another, like, we're going to get down to the what's your least favorite activity is the next question. A lot of people do say watering.
To me, watering
is time consuming.
I like being out there early in the morning. And, you know, I don't mind watering it. You know, it makes me look at each individual plant and how it's doing. You know, it makes me observant about how things are doing, what's using a lot of water, what isn't. My intense hatred for weed pulling, and it's the only way that the things I want to grow well will do well is if they're not competing with weeds. Mm-hmm. And the fact of the matter is, if you're not going to use chemicals to kill them and poison your food, you have to get on your hands and knees and pull them out. It's a dirty, hot job, but it has to be done. And, you know, when you end that dirty, hot job with a shower and a cold beer and look out over your beautiful garden, it's not so bad.
Nope. It feels like a big sense of accomplishment. To me, it reminds me of, like, you know, wiping off the blackboard in the classroom a lot. All of a sudden, you've got the, you know, your nice brown dirt next to your plants that are growing. Some things that I have to say that have worked really well for us is because we've had such a shortage of water at our house, we're forced to put the water right at the roots of the plants, and that really reduces the weeds. Like, we can't just put a sprayer on, although we did. Well, finally, we dug a new well, so we have been doing that this year. But I think just old habits. Plus, we've been running out of water. It's so dry. With my husband planted like this little mini farm. That's one thing. And then also certainly mulching. Do you do any mulching, like where you put straw around your beds at all?
Oh,
or any of
that? I do two things. So in the fall every year, when we clean up the garden, I put down a layer, not thick, you know, I'm talking 3 or 4 sheets of newspaper. And we don't bag our leaves. We mulch them, obviously. And I cover it with a layer of mulch. And then when I plant in spring, I just cut through that newspaper and plant my plant in the soil, and I leave the newspaper intact. Eventually it dissolves into the soil and, you know, it gets, tilled in, you know, every other year. So that does help control the weeds, but they come no matter what. But it does help control, you know, and shade helps to shade the plant roots.
Okay. Let me just make sure I'm visualizing this right. Okay. So you put down, like, you open the newspaper and lay out the big sheets, or do you cut them? Are you shredding it, or?
Nope. I take the New York Times. And so we have a garden bed that's a combination of perennial flowers and a large part of vegetables. And it's probably 30 feet long by, you know, 8 feet wide, and borders one whole side of the yard. And then we have, you know, supplemental gardens. So when we clean that up at the end of the season in the fall, I till in any remnants of past, you know, mulch and whatnot, and paper. Generally, it's almost gone by the end of the season because it's not thick. It's, you know, 2 sheets, maybe 3 where it overlaps of, we use the New York Times because it's big. And that then, so we till in whatever's left and put on 2 sheets of paper and mulch on top of it.
And when you say mulch on top of it, you're talking about the leaves that you've collected from falling from the trees?
Yeah, from our mulch pile. So, you know, I like I said, I tend not to put food scraps because it attracts too much vermin, but it's, you know, leaves, and I do put eggshells and coffee grinds in it. That's about it as far as food, and, you know, whatever other yard waste we come up with.
Do you put grass clippings?
No, I don't, because it's too much nitrogen, believe it or not.
Okay. So then what's your favorite activity to do in the garden, Mary?
You know, this makes me sound old, I guess. I just like to sit there and look at it with my husband in the evening, you know, and you listen to the lazy bumblebee, and, you know, you watch the butterflies land on the butterfly bush, and thank God that bush does its job. It's so pretty. And, or the spring, the scent of the peonies, it's just to sit there and enjoy it. Honestly, it's our, you know, our favorite thing to do. And I will give some advice to new gardeners. You asked me this before, and it slipped my mind. Take pictures. and take pictures throughout the growing cycle so that you remember the zucchini next year needs, you know, 10 feet of room, not a foot.
And I know. I don't understand how people live without a journal. If you don't go back and like remember things and say, oh, yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Excellent. That's super advice.
But my favorite thing to do is just enjoy it, to look at it and, you know, to walk around watering and pop a cherry into my mouth, which I can do because it's not full of chemicals. Mm-hmm. Makes me extremely happy.
I think you should write a book about your garden because your passion and your inspiration and your knowledge. I mean, I've learned so much already in just these first few questions. But just the way you talk about it is really eloquent and just really nice. Think about that.
I have to just share one thing.
Sure.
The thing that made me most happy about my garden, we have, we concentrate our flowers in the front. So, you know, some shrub roses where the deer can't get to them. And my husband's favorite flowers are daisies. We have lots of daisies and echinacea and liatris, all native plants that do very well, gratefully. And we have the village green is, we live on like the village square. So, you know, there's a park and a gazebo and whatnot. Aww. And we were at some function there. And I was talking to this woman I see around town all the time. And she said, oh, you live around here, don't you? I said, yes, I live in that house right over there. And she excitedly called another mother and her daughters over and said, forgive me, I don't remember the little girl's name, but let's call her Jackie for now. Jackie, Jackie, do you see this lady? This lady lives in the Daisy house.
Aww.
And when I heard that, of course I burst into tears because, you know, I cry at home on commercials, but that made me realize that every drop of sweat was worth it.
That's the best story. I could be the Daisy. Jackie, go look. That's the Daisy lady. Somebody would say that to me totally. My husband, I love daisies. That was our wedding flower. We picked daisy. It was a miracle. They bloomed like 2 days before my wedding.
Oh, wow. Mine were hydrangea, another one of my favorites.
Which one? So, sorry, what?
Mine were hydrangea, green pea hydrangea.
Aww.
That my aunt grew in her garden for my bouquet.
Aww. Nice. That is a lovely story. All right. Well, tell us about the best crop you ever grew. Was there one year that something was so prolific you didn't know what to do with it all?
This actually is another.
Oh my gosh, you're gonna make us laugh some more. Cool.
Five, maybe six summers ago now, my next door neighbor, lovely woman named Anna, was tremendously pregnant, and it was a ghastly hot summer. It was, you know, both July and August. She was due at the end of August. She couldn't eat anything. She was feeling sickly. And I had so many cucumbers, it wasn't even funny. And these were Kirby cucumbers. Uh-huh. And I used to make her cucumber and dill salad every single day. Uh-huh. Tomato and cucumber salad. And I think that's what she lived on that summer. And now that little girl comes over with her little princess bowl and picks tomatoes from my garden.
Aww.
So that was the best crop for more reason than one.
That's awesome. That's so sweet. All right. Well, here's the what's the best gardening advice have you ever received question.
What's the best gardening advice?
I know it's a tough one.
Keep it simple. Organic matter in the soil. Nothing is good until it's ripe. So don't try and pull things or fruit should come off when it's heavy and ready. It should feel heavy and just come off with a gentle twist. So nothing is good until it's ripe. I think that's the best advice I ever got.
Cool. Have you ever entered a fair?
No. And we go to them. Of course, they're you know, county fairs are very popular around here. Oh. But no, I haven't. I appreciate everyone else's efforts, and you know, I've never grown a 3,000-pound pumpkin that was worthy of the fair entry. So my 1-pound Cherokee purple tomato just probably isn't going to cut it.
But don't they have like, because my husband wins the most prizes for uniform size. Like they don't have to be the biggest, but like, he's gotten a lot of awards for you bring in like a plate full of peppers or a handful of green beans or something. And he's won a lot of awards for most. So you might look into what they got there. I don't know.
Yeah, I still probably rather eat them. I don't know.
I know. I'm not a big fair person either, but it's fun here and there. How about a favorite tool that you like to use? If you had to move and could only take one tool with you, what could you not live without?
It's a hand spade with a pointed end and a serrated, 4-inch serrated band on either side. I walk around on my hip like I'm a cop with a gun. It's never far from my. In my side entry, my little mud room, whatever, are always my gardening gloves and my shovel. It's the best tool ever.
Cool. Okay. How about secrets for preserving food or making it last?
So, like we talked about before, pickling is great. It's super easy to do, and it's almost foolproof as long as there's hundreds of recipes online for both, quick refrigerator pickles and more long-term, mason jar sealed pickles. Jelly jar sealed pickles that you can put up for winter, not refrigerated. And again, roasting the vegetables or sauteing them and freezing them in an airtight manner is by far the best way to preserve it.
Perfect. How about any special techniques for cooking weird or unusual foods, or weird and unusual techniques for cooking ordinary foods?
I tend, like with really good fresh fruit and vegetables, I tend not to do too much to it. I like to let whatever it is speak for itself. It's an eggplant. It should taste like an eggplant. Mm-hmm. A little garlic, a little salt, a little pepper, and whatever herbs you like. Mm-hmm. I keep it simple.
How about a favorite recipe you like to cook from the garden?
I think it's something I have in my refrigerator at every moment of every day. Oh. It's chickpeas, cucumbers, tomatoes, olive oil, a vinaigrette, which is olive oil, mustard, champagne vinegar, and some herbs and spices. And I always have it in the refrigerator, and I have it for lunch every day.
Oh, that chickpea, sounds delicious.
Tomato, and it is delicious, and it's good for you, and it's, incredibly easy to make.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a favorite internet resource? Anywhere you go on the internet to find gardening tips or anything?
We're lucky to have Rutgers University here in New Jersey, uh-huh. And they have an agricultural cooperative extension, and they are phenomenal. They are an amazing resource for every question you can think of. They offer classes. They have an extensive online presence with every question that I seem to have. There already seems to be an answer there.
Okay, I'm going to have to check that out. And last year, when I was in New York, this girl gave my mom a tomato plant that came from their test plot or something, and that thing grew. It was a monster. It was really cool. How about a favorite reading book or reading material, like a book or a magazine or a blog that you go to a lot? Anything to recommend?
I like very local blogs. So like I go to our local farms, all have blogs now. Mm-hmm. And it really tells me what works in my environment. It helps me with issues or questions about my environment. So local farms, local nurseries. I tend not to go to like the big garden centers. I'm more, I like the people who grow the plants, not just sell the plant. Mm-hmm. And I tend to find that they have a greater connection with how the plant grows and how it works well. Mm-hmm. So I people who would do this for a living are generally the people who know how to do it well.
That's so important. And I had a guest on, Dave Salmon. He was episode 50 from New Mexico. And he was like a pioneer in native plant species having a nursery. And he talked a lot about that he would have kind of like a test plot in front of his nursery where people could see the plants that he was selling growing right there. We talked a lot about how the people who worked at his nursery were so much more educated to help the customers he did a lot of that because his biggest goal, he talked so much about, he got into organic gardening because he wanted his customers to be successful. And that was where he found the most successful for them. He actually went to college, I think in Colorado, and got a degree in horticulture and had to relearn a lot of what he was taught in college in order to make the customers who came to his nursery successful. And he found that was one of the big secrets, was having the plants actually growing right there in front of the nursery.
Yeah, he's right. I think, and it helps when people are successful at doing something like that, they're more apt to do it again every year, mm-hmm. and to want to do it better or bigger, you know?
Mm-hmm. Aw. Okay. Are you ready for my final question already?
Oh, I am. This time has just flown by.
I told you it'd be fun.
It has been.
I know, it's so funny, in my podcasting group, we all talk about, like, I wish somebody would have told me how fun it was. Like, so many of us talk about how long it took us to launch and how nervous we were and how scared. And then once we start doing it, at least the recording part, the interview part's fun. I got to say, there's a lot of hard work you don't see in the behind the scenes. But anyway, yeah, it's a lot of fun. So anyway, here's my final question. If there's one change you would like to see to create a greener world, what would it be? For example, is there a charity or organization you're passionate about, or a project you'd like to see put into action? Like, what do you feel, Mary, is the most crucial issue facing our planet in regards to the environment, either locally, nationally, or globally?
I think we have to stop using product. I think it has to be happen on an individual level. You know, everything is with you kind of idea. You have to stop buying things that are toxic, and you have to be ever so thoughtful about what your footprint is on the earth. Aww. Ever so thoughtful. You know, think about when you get in your car to drive your car, and yes, it's a wonderful, wonderful thing, but, you know, just think about what you're doing every moment you're doing it.
I think that's perfect. Mike and I were just having this debate yesterday because I was, he's like such a like carbon footprint, like watching his footprint all the time. And I was giving him a bunch of flack about coming home and his cell phone wasn't charged after he'd been on this big long ride. And I was like, why didn't you plug it into the car charger? Like, to me, to plug my phone into the wall in my house, and you, to me, that's like fresh juice.
Whereas right.
If it's going while my car is running anyway, I feel like I'm not using any juice. Now, he informed me that, yes, indeed, it does take some energy in the car to make the alternator charge the battery. But to me, it's like I try to always have my phone charge. I rarely plug it into the wall in the house.
Yeah.
So no, I think just little things like that.
Right. Listen, just be very thoughtful about what you're doing, what you're buying. And, you know, I'd rather see somebody, you know, I buy one very good quality thing that is going to last me a long time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't like throwing things away. It's made the whole chain of what it took to make that thing completely useless. All that energy and all those, you know, all that effort. Mm-hmm. If I'm just throwing it away mindlessly, it completely negates everything it took to create it.
Have you seen that movie, The Story of Stuff? It's like a little video. This girl has done several, she's got like a website and everything and several movies, but one of them's called The Story of Stuff, and it talks all about the process from where it starts and all the way through to the landfill. That's just an excellent example of that.
I'll have to look at it. That sounds interesting.
Yeah, I'll put the link in the show notes. So, how about an inspirational tip or quote to help motivate listeners to reach into the dirt and start their own garden?
I think my favorite is, don't add to the bad. Just don't make anything, you know, don't make it worse. Don't plant, you know, beautiful, lovely, fresh vegetables and then douse them with, you know, chemical fertilizer or chemical pesticides. It's healthier for you too. Your kids, you know, running around the yard don't need to be running through chemicals and pesticides.
You know, that's like one of the biggest things I have learned from this podcast is how toxic people's lawns are to kids and to dogs. Like, a lot of, I think the tests that they do are more on adult humans, and they're not measuring the effects of the pesticides on a small child, and that their respiratory systems, and that a lot of the diseases, including autism, they're showing a big link between autism and glyphosate, which is the key ingredient in Roundup. And just it just like amazes me. Like now I think like walking down the street, you really how many people like why would they let a toddler crawl on a lawn
Oh,
like that?
and, you know, and why use Roundup when vinegar works just fine? It really does. Full strength white vinegar is cheap and it'll get rid of weeds like nothing else. You know, not in the garden, but in, you know, in the cracks around, not the cracks, but you know.
Cool. All right. There's another great tip. Well, thank you, Mary, so much for sharing your knowledge and your expertise and your passion. Like, we can tell that you've been doing this for a while and you've got some definite firsthand knowledge out there. And I think that's what people love about this show is just hearing from different people who are actually doing it. Just regular, ordinary day people who have jobs and who work and who just really like to have homegrown vegetables. And I think, you know, organic options, we all would love to be able to go to the store and buy the organic produce, and it's hard to do. And so to be able to get your grow your own, simply, thank you for sharing.
Thank you, and thank you for your thoughtful questions. It actually made me realize I might know a little more than I thought I did, and I feel like a more successful gardener. So I appreciate your thoughtful questions.
Excellent. Well, you have a good day, okay?
You as well.
Hey everyone, Jackie Marie Beyer here, your host for the Organic Gardener Podcast. I want to announce we're going to have a new contest for August. This is kind of something I used to do when I ran a printer and, you know, as a teacher, always in the coloring sheets. So I designed a little Organic Gardener Podcast coloring sheet you can download off of our website at theorganicgardenerpodcast.com, just organicgardenerpodcast.com. I'll try to put it, maybe a link on the top of the page. And, you know, everybody knows a kid. You've got grandkids, regular kids, nieces, nephews, next door neighbors, you know, friends, somebody, I'm sure there's a kid in your life who can color a picture of you in your garden. You can use our coloring sheet or you can just submit your own original drawing. It doesn't have to be on that coloring sheet, but I just made that so it wouldn't be so intimidating, so it'd be easier. So just a picture of you. I'm big on stick figures. I can do a lot with a stick figure. You know, in your garden, and then we'll pick a winner or two, and they will win some note cards, just like I make my note cards. So just, you know, click a picture of it, email it to me. I'll put a little submission thing on the website. Just send us a picture. You know, it's orgpodcast@gmail.com, orgpodcast@gmail.com for organic podcast, organic garden podcast@gmail.com. And send us your contest entry for the coloring contest. I also wanted to say thank you, everybody, for the just super supportive, kind comments. I'm still working on transferring everything to the new MacBook, but it seems to be working. Kelly was the last episode on the old MacBook. Marissa's interviews and the GrowBot people were the first ones on the new MacBook. And, you know, everybody's been loving Marissa. It seems like we're getting lots more views on the website, which makes me feel so good. If you have any questions, anything you want to learn how to cook, you can reach out to her at thekitcheninmissoula@gmail.com, and she'd be happy to answer. You know, anything you want to know how to cook, we'd be happy to talk about on the show. She's just a super chef. I've tasted her cooking, and it's just delicious. So I'm glad people are liking that part. If there's anything Mike and I can help you with, a few people have been asking me questions I'm trying to find answers for. If you would like to be a guest or you know a guest, you know, we really want to hit all 50 states. I think we're up to 17 states now with the kids from Hawaii, the GrowBot kids we got on, or I guess they're not all kids. I think the creator's actually my age. But yeah, we got Hawaii in there. So if you know someone or you want to be a guest, thanks for reaching out to me. I've been trying to answer everybody. It's Jackie Marie Beyer, Beyer, on Facebook. So if I haven't gotten back to you or I've missed something, I'm super sorry. I found a whole bunch of comments in the spam part of WordPress that I didn't know existed. And speaking of WordPress, hopefully we're going to get our site redesigned in August. I have a few things I'm working on there. Probably won't show up until September, but we're going to try to redesign it, make it easier to search for things, make it easier to find things. And then So if I have missed your comment, I'm sorry. I did, like I said, find a bunch of comments in the spam folder. Some were really spam, but more than not were not. And so I don't know why they've been pulling them out. You know, hit me up on Facebook. It's Jackie Marie Beyer. I'm still trying to figure out how to kind of manage that part with the Organic Gardener podcast and then my artist site. But you can like the Organic Gardener podcast page. And just, it, sometimes when you send messages there, they go to the other folder, I guess. There's an other messages folder. So I kind of have been trying to keep track of that. So I'm sorry if I've missed anything. And, if you haven't heard back from me, I would say try again, because I did try to get everything caught up at the end of July. So if you haven't heard anything, I probably either didn't get it or I really missed it somewhere. So maybe just try again. I'm so sorry about everybody who has been reaching out, thank you, thank you, thank you. It just encourages me. If there's anything you want to know, if there's any guests that you want to have on, if you want to be a guest, if you're growing in your garden, everybody's always surprised at how much they actually know and little tricks that they have to share. And I think that's part of why people like the show, because the variety of the guests. So like I said once before, I'm trying to hit all 50 states. I'm only up to like 17 states, which is pretty good. You know, we got Hawaii in there with the Growbot kids the other day. I call them kids. Haha. Anyway, thanks for listening. And just let me know if there's anything we can do to help you on your gardening journey. Jackie Marie Beyer signing out. Grow local.
Thank you for listening to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'd like to encourage you to visit our website at awesomemontana.com. That's just AWESOMEMONTANA.com, like awesome Montana, all spelled out. And click on Mike's Green Garden and the Organic Gardener Podcast, and it will link right to the show notes and all the things we've talked about on today's show. Thanks again for listening, and grow local.